there contains elements in your movie, for example, music and women. What is your rationale behind that, and what is the justification for containing these elements? Because in Islamic space, a lot of people get criticized for having this stuff in their content. A lot of people get dragged for having music, for example, in their Instagram reels, and you see it all the time. What is your thoughts behind this?
First thing I'd say is that, to be honest with you, first of all, it's not the first time this has been done. So we have series like the Omar series, we have like the Risala series and these kinds of series, which have all those elements. In fact, in both of us, two sides of Burning Hands, we tried our best to create nasheeds, even though some of them sound like music.
Yep.
And we have no problem mentioning that. Okay, you could misinterpret this as music, but we both put a lot of work into making these into nasheeds. It's not easy to do that. However, just on the point, so there are fatwas that have been given by legendaries and big scholars and stuff like that on these series, on the Omar series and the Ertuğrul series and these kind of things. And in many ways, the fatwas are there. It's ijtihad that's been done by big scholars and people can refer to that. But I would just say, look, I mean, I think that people who posit these kinds of arguments could fall into what you refer to as self-defeating arguments. Okay, I'm not here to say this is halal or haram, because that's not my job. I'm not mujtahid here. As I mentioned, the ijtihad has already been done by lots of scholars. Like, for example, Sheikh Haddad al-Shanqiti, right? He actually doesn't believe that looking at a woman's hair who's a non-believer without shahwa, without desire, is sinful. Because he does qiyas on the amma, or the slave in the past. He says, like, back in the days, the companions used to be around certain marketplaces and they used to see women with the hair. So he says the illah is not this. And this is a fatwa that's on the public record. And he also mentions that this is Amum al-Balwa. So this is Sheikh Haddad, who is considered to be one of the greatest scholars of the day. And frankly, like, you know, his Markaz Takwin al-Ulama, his Markaz, for you to go into the Markaz, you have to have memorized the Qur'an in two different riwayas. Like, you have to have memorized the Qur'an in two different qira'as and riwayas as well. So, and it's 17 years to finish his Markaz. So we're talking about scholarship on a very high level. His stances on, for example, Gaza and the political space are much more acceptable to us than other scholars, for example. So that's Ad-Dada. He's made fatwas already. It's on the public record. We've consulted him. We've spoken to him. He wanted to see all the episodes. All the episodes haven't come out yet. But on the issues of Ikhtilat and the issues of looking at a woman, he's a bit more lenient on these issues. And he's considered to be a very traditional scholar, a very traditional conservative scholar, right? Mauritanian. So that's one thing, that's A. B is, the reason why I said I'm not here to say something is halal or haram, but that if you make this argument and you make it vociferously and vehemently, you're likely to fall into a self-defeating position, is for the following reason. There are many fatwas out there that people from all traditional circles have put out that rely on issues to do with maslaha and darura and akhaf al-dararain, ideas of the common good. And let me give you an example. Sheikh bin Baz, for example. Sheikh bin Baz, who is considered to be one of the most praised Salafi scholars in the last 50 years and accepted Salafi scholars in the last 50 years, he made a fatwa very famous in 1990 that the Americans can come into Saudi Arabia, okay, and do tamarkuz there and stay there in response to, for example, the aggression of Saddam Hussein. Okay? Now, how many things does that, from a textual perspective, go against? Sorry to put it this way, but it goes against the idea that a Muslim cannot do isti'ana of a kafir, that a Muslim cannot seek help from a disbeliever. It goes against the fact that Jews and Christians should not be in Jazeera al-Arab. It goes against multiple different things, right? What could be the only mubarrir justification for a fatwa like this? Darura, maslaha, Haja, whatever you like, akhaf al-darain, less of two evils. So it's not like in the Salafi space, for example, I'm using Salafism as an example, it's not just Salafism, it's Diobandism and all of them, yeah? But it's not like in those spaces that masla has not been used. It's been used in a more severe matter, in fact. Like, politics is way more severe here, bro. Like, I'm sorry to say, this is aqaidi matter, this is aqidah matter, because it connects to tawalli and alliance and all these things, لا يتخذ المؤمنين الكافرين من دون المؤمنين, أولياء من دون المؤمنين, and so on, right? That's number one. Number two is, Look at the fatwa of Ibn Uthaymeen. Ibn Uthaymeen made the fatwa famously, another one important scholar of the last 50 years, one of the most important scholars of the last 50 years in Salafi Islam, that voting is acceptable. Voting in the parliamentary elections is acceptable because of akhaf al-dararain, lesser of two evils. Now consider the following. According to the principles that are put in all of the books of these scholars, وَمَنْ لَمْ يَحْكُمْ بِمَا أَنْزَلَ اللَّهُ فَأُولَٰئِكَ هُمُ الْكَافِرُونَ. Whoever does not rule by what Allah has revealed is a disbeliever. Okay. How can you say this? Oh, it has to be because of lesser of two evils. So the reason why I'm bringing it to your attention is not to say this fatwa is right or this fatwa is wrong. It's just to bring to your attention that it's not alien to us to use principles of maslaha and akhaf al-dararain, lesser of two evils, even though there seems to be a nas which clearly, a textual evidence which clearly goes against these things, because the situation has changed at a very high level. But in all the examples I'm giving you, these are political examples. And maslaha has been used in certain circles on political examples quite often. But when it comes to transactional examples, like mu'amalat, so you have siyasa here. But then mu'amalat, which is interactions, why are we so strict? Like, here's the point. So what is more severe? Like, for example, what we're witnessing in Gaza today, the killing and the genocide and all of this, this is a political matter. The silence of the scholars is justified on a khafd al-rain. The silence of the scholars, like the scholars across the Arab world now, that are not saying a word about Gaza. And we give them azam because we say it's a khafd al-rain and maslaha and all this kind of stuff. Even though there's a genocide and there's left-wing homosexuals in this country who have the ability to say what's happening in Gaza is wrong. But on the basis of maslaha and khafd al-rain, all this kind of stuff, we say these scholars are ma'adhur, no problem. Yeah, which means that they are excused. So it's not foreign to use these concepts, even for the, if you want to call them hardliners, the most hardline of the hardliners, they would use these fatwas in the context of politics. But it's taboo to use them in the context of mu'amalat, even though it's so less, so much less. There's no aqidah implications, and there's no implications on being a major sin. There's no major sin here being discussed. This is mu'amalat, frankly. And I won't take it further and say there's difference of opinion on these matters. I could say that. I say, and a lot of these matters that are being discussed, there's difference of opinion on where the lines are drawn anyway. But what I will say is this. So this is Exhibit A. Exhibit B is this. If you say, well, the issue is, brother, you are in your series, in your stuff like that, you've got like females, you've got, you know, whatever. And you've got these things that sound like music, even though it's not music. But let's just say, I say, fine, I understand where you're coming from, and you have all the right. I mean, I haven't got a problem with anyone doing nahi and munkar, if you think it's actual munkar. I don't even blame you for that. I think you're right. Maybe you'll get rewarded for saying this stuff. Well, no problem. But my issue is this, my question is this. Let's look at social media as an example. YouTube itself. YouTube. Or Facebook or Instagram. What is the likelihood that if you go on YouTube that you'll see a woman without a headscarf?
100%.
100% actually, yeah. Because these adverts are running and they're ijbari, they are actually obligatory.
It's not in your control.
So if you go on YouTube and it's the likelihood's 100% that you're going to see a woman without a headscarf, and the likelihood's 100% that you're going to hear music, and then you have a scholar, let's say from whatever traditional school you want, who's on YouTube, yes, who's on YouTube, then what you're effectively doing is that for me to watch that scholar, I have to watch a woman without a headscarf. Now, you could say, well, that's because they haven't chosen to put it there. They're not putting it in their video. Okay, but they could create a website that is completely deplete of these elements and direct all of their followers to go to that website. There is basically an alternative. So what's the reason for you putting yourself on YouTube when you know music and women are on YouTube itself? Oh, because the maslaha is greater here. Because many people, the algorithm is there and people will watch it. So you're making a maslaha argument then. You see the point? So okay, no problem. If you're making a maslaha argument and you're making a nusuli argument, I'm not saying your argument is right and my argument is wrong, but it's different, brother. And your one is different because you're putting it in the video itself. No problem. You're right, it is different. Everything that is compared is different. Otherwise it would be the same thing, which means, because when you do an analogy and say, well, this versus this, when someone says, well, but it's different because... Everything compared has to be different, by the way.
Well, there's no comparison.
There's no comparison. Otherwise, we're talking about tautologies here, actually. Of course it's different. I mean, there's different aspects. The main difference is they're being passive about this. So they're not putting actively the women into the video. And in the example B, there's a passive reality. But in both cases, if you agree that sometimes inaction can be an action. For example, if I'm driving, if I'm steering a train, and there is a human being on the tracks like this, and it's in my ability to go right and divert, not kill this human being, and I stay as I am,
chosen.
would I be, and I've chosen to do this, would I be murdering this individual? Yes, I would be. If it's my ability to turn it this way, do you see the point? Yeah. It's inaction, but the inaction here is actually action, and this is something that Sharia recognizes. So going back to the point, even though it's inaction, they're not putting women in the videos, these great mashayikh who's got these YouTube channels, they're not putting women in the videos, but the inaction here is still an action, because you are diverting your followers to seeing something by force that they wouldn't otherwise see if you had your own personal website. Which means that you, in order to avoid this, you have to make a maslaha argument. You have to say, well, the maslaha on YouTube is so great that this, these haram elements, yes, they are, we have to overlook them because the greater good is, yeah. Now, they will say, someone may respond and say, in Usul Fiqh, there is something called Dar al-Mafasid Muqaddaman ala Jalb al-Masalah, which is a principle, which is that, you know, Dar al-Mafasid, that to avert a consequence is better than to get a good. And so you cannot justify, the means don't justify the ends. But that's not actually true. Dar al-mafasid muqaddama ala jalb al-masalih is not ala itlaqihi. And the one who's wrote, interestingly, a whole risala on this is Ibn Taymiyyah. Ibn Taymiyyah wrote a risala, al-risalatu fi al-hasanati wa sayyi'at, which basically, he, long story short, in this, he says, this qaida of dar al-mafasid muqaddama ala jalb al-masalih is not ala itlaqihi, it's not generalized, and that sometimes the maslaha kubra tajlib, which means the following. It means that you got to look, going back to the YouTube example, at the overall benefit for the Muslim community. So, if YouTube was a platform with 10,000 subscribers, only 10,000 people in it, maybe you could make an argument that putting yourself as a sheikh on YouTube, huh, would be unjustified because there's only 10,000 people going to watch it. But because it's got 1 billion people, clear, so that shows you that the more maslaha there is, the more justification there is. But then we're stuck in a catch-22 situation, because then if we become pragmatic and say, like, we're going to go into this creative industry, and we can't tell a story about, for example, Muslim people in Britain without removing 50% of the population, it becomes an incomplete story, in my opinion. Because look, we're trying to tell stories here, right? You want to remove women from storytelling, which means you're trying to tell a complete story without women. If that was possible, why didn't the Quran do that? Every single Nabi in the Quran, there's a woman connected to him somehow. In the stories of the Quran, Yusuf alayhi salam, the antagonist was a woman. There was many women. His mother was in the story as well. Yeah, for example. Moses, his wives were in the stories. For instance. Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, Khadija, Fatima, etc. So to remove women from the story, you can't really have a complete, you cannot do the job. It's a handicap already, trying to do something in the creative industry. You're creating an additional handicap if you're trying to remove women from the reality. So the issue is one of maslaha. It's really as simple as that. And I know it's difficult for people to understand, but 10, 20 years ago, we were having a conversation as whether Mashayikh should be using YouTube.
Yeah.
Now that conversation's obsolete. No one's speaking about that because the maslaha is so great, no one talks about it. It may be the case that 20 or 30 years from now, we will be having the same conversation and we'll say we should have joined the creative industry before. Because the maslaha is so great and we're not dealing with kaba'ir, we're not dealing with aqa'id, we should have done this before. So the criticism are fine so long as they don't impact someone's pragmatic ability to do two things. I'la kalimatullah, raising Allah's word, and number two, tamkeen al-muslimin, to make Muslims in a better position. And involving ourselves in the creative industry are an attempt to fulfill those two objectives.
Have you received that criticism, and how have you dealt with that?
I mean, of course we've received that criticism. Yeah. But the thing is, almost at every level, when I was doing dawah, there was a point where someone was criticizing something that I was doing. Like, when we first went to Speaker's Corner, I think 10 years ago, 9 years ago, we used to try and blur women in the background. That's what we tried to do. I remember the first time I'd done a video, I told my wife, listen, blur this woman, she's got no headscarf in the background. That's what I told her. We done it, and it took too long. It took 3 hours, 4 hours. Inconvenience, great inconvenience for everybody. Yeah. And so after that, we didn't blur them anymore because it was just too hard to do that. Yeah. That was the first thing. And so people got used to that. Sorry to say. You've got some people who are strict, very strict Salafis, or strict Deobandis, whatever. They'll go to Speaker's Corner and they'll be speaking to a woman. Sometimes her cleavage will be showing out and they'll post the video, no problem. I'm not saying that's a good thing. Sometimes you can, you know, blur anything like that. I'm not saying that's a good thing. But I'm saying that, I'm saying that there's a realization that when something proliferates at a certain level, this is called the Amum al-Balwa. There's a name for it in Usul Fiqh. You can't control it, khalas, now. Like, the onus is upon the person to look away if they're finding shahwa. Do you know what I mean? No one talks about that now. No one criticizes the point. If I go to Speaker's Corner right now and do free mixing in Speaker's Corner with three women, homosexuals, lesbian, and I start speaking even about some issues, you know? No, honestly. And they're all there and they look beautiful, yes? Better than anybody in the show. Anything you like, yeah? And I'm speaking to them, whatever. No one's going to say anything. It's free. No one's going to say this is free mixing.
Is it a dilution then? Has it just been diluted? Is that an issue? Is that it's because we've become desensitized to it?
No,
is
it's not. It's right, no, look,
and wrong and desensitized.
Do you know, Burning Hands is a name. It's named after the hadith, you know, that in the Jamratun min nar. Jamra is the jimar, like the coals from you. In the end of days, you'll be holding onto the religion like you hold onto coals. Imam Shafi'i mentioned the following. He said that when the situation gets difficult, the Sharia should become more lenient. And when the situation becomes easier, the Sharia can become more restrictive. Mm-hmm. What I'm trying to say is that we are living in the end of times, and it's hard for us to maintain our religion. The job of the Ammi is to be strong and have patience and have resilience. In my understanding, the job of the Mufti and the Mujtahid is to do takhfif of the, or to cool down the heat of the burning coals, to make Islam more easy for somebody to live throughout all their lives, especially on the interaction matters. Now, that doesn't mean we're going to just open up the floodgates, you can do whatever you like, but don't make things too difficult. Like, let me give you an example, bro. Do you drive a car?
Yeah.
Okay, everyone here drives a car, most of us drive a car. What's the hukum of car insurance?
Haram.
It's haram. Bro, okay, so why have they made it halal?
Mandatory.
It's not, but it's not mandatory. Okay, but my question is...
Makes it impractical to live a life.
Yeah, but the point is this, Akhi. No one's going to die if they don't drive a car. And we have the best transportation in the world in London. You can go on underground. You can go in...
Hardship.
Yeah, so here's the thing. You have some... Gharar, aslan, is haram. Gharar is car insurance, ta'meen. Okay, it's haram. You've made it... Every single school of thought that I know of, they've made it halal, not based on darura, because you cannot argue that someone's going to die if they don't drive a car. There's alternatives. It's just based on maslaha and based on hardship and haja. Okay, so why are you allowed to do it like this? Why are you allowed to do this? Oh, because things reach, there's a critical point where things become too difficult for the population, where the scholars come in and say, okay, well, you know what? Driving cars is a pretty practical thing to have. So each scholar is going to have their own limits on that. All I'm saying is that in terms of interactions, some scholars are going to be a bit more lenient about that. Some scholars are going to be a bit more strict about that. In terms of interactions in the West, I'm sorry to say, okay, I follow scholars who are a little bit more lenient on these issues because I can't be true to myself and be consistent and live a life like, for example, if I were to say, I believe that every time I look at a woman's face who's non-Muslim, I'm committing a sin. I don't believe that, by the way. That's not the opinion that I follow. I follow the opinion that if I look at her face and I feel shahwa, if I feel desire, if I look at her body and I feel desire, that's haram. That's where lower in there. If I'm interacting with her, for example, I'm giving her money, whatever. If I'm looking at her for that reason and there's no shahwa going on, I don't. The opinion that I follow, which is the classical opinion in the books of Kutub al-Fiqh, I don't think I'm committing a sin. Now, if I did believe that even if I looked at one strand of hair of a woman who's a non-Muslim, that I'd be committing a sin. Frankly, I wouldn't know what to do with myself because everybody, do you know what I mean? I'd be walking the street and accumulating sin. I wouldn't even leave the house. Why are you leaving the house? Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It makes not life not just impossible to live. It makes it like, It's too difficult. It falls into what the Prophet ﷺ, in my opinion, says. You know, he says, "Inna dina yusr, la yashad dina ahadun illa ghalaba." You're going too far now. This umum al-balwa thing is a big thing. Umum al-balwa is when things become so proliferated that it's difficult to do without. If you can apply it for car insurance, I'm sorry to say, the existence of women with a headscarf is way more proliferated than car insurance. And gharar is worse than this, by the way. It's gharar is a major, it's not major sin, but it's a more severe sin than look at a woman one time. You could argue. Because you're selling, it's an invalid type of, it's an invalid contract in Buyua, actually, it's an invalid contract. So all I'm trying to say is that, try and be true to yourself, whatever your views. If your views are, and I respect it, if your views are, for example, that yeah, I believe that looking at one strand of a woman from even for maslaha purpose, haram. And don't go on social media. Why are you coming on YouTube to comment about this? Because YouTube itself has too many things like this. You can't be true to yourself like that. If you're true to yourself, because there are some people who are true to themselves. They say, I have not one screen in my house. I do this, this, that, and the other, and you know, I think this is haram. Wallahi, I take it from them. I respect those guys. But if you're gonna go down this route, be ready to be consistent. And it's gonna be very difficult to be that level of consistent in living in the London or Luton or the West in general. It's gonna be very difficult. So there has to be a level of leniency. Because otherwise we see this all the time. You come into the religion all hard like that, and then you come out of the religion all hard like that. That's how I see it. Wallahu alam. Sorry, I spoke a lot there.
No, thank you.